time to listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday, the 12th of January 2013. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning by the Humble Pie Village Butchery. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Oneroa. On Saturday, the 12th of January 2013, Jan Scott talked to Alex Stone about marine reserves, Brian Griffiths about the Twilight Rambles, she spoke to filmmaker Eli Reed and Julia from Waiheke Library.
Now you're listening to Island Life on Waiheke Radio, your community radio station. And it's my pleasure to say good morning to Alex Stone. Good morning, Alex.
Hi, how are you?
Good, good. Now, you've come to talk to us about the possibility of a marine reserve for Waiheke.
Yeah, sure. I sort of found myself the spokesperson for a loose grouping of nearly 100 Waiheke locals who are very concerned about the state of the Gulf. And we would like to promote a north side marine reserve on Waiheke to kind of balance the one that's at Tematuka Bay on the south side. We think a north side marine reserve is called for to protect a different ecosystem, and also because it's high time. We really need it, yeah.
Right. So how are you going about this?
Trying to do it in the most positive and least divisive way possible.
Not an easy call for Waiheke.
No, not at all. But I think I've been talking quietly to just about everyone I know on the island, and especially recreational fishermen, over the last 2 years. And I've written columns about it and so on. And I just want us to get to a point where we can all agree it's a good thing. I know we all agree the Gulf is a lovely place to live within, and I think as the significant community living entirely surrounded by the Hauraki Gulf Marine Park, we really should take the lead in protecting it. It's a sort of issue of guardianship for future generations. Yeah.
Yes, that's right. Now there has been, I think you've got a report there back from 2011.
2011. What actually got me going was the Hauraki Gulf Forum. Every 4 years they are legally bound to produce a report called The State of Our Gulf. And the one in 2011 makes for quite concerning reading. It's the best of New Zealand science. You know, all of the report is written by the best scientists we have. And the report received wide publicity when it was launched in November 2011. It made the front page of the Herald, etc., etc. And the report has some quite disturbing statistics. And probably the most concerning one is the easiest to grasp, because it's all about the iconic species, the snapper. You know, everyone that fishes around here talks about the snapper. And the report showed that they do monitoring of the fish and so on. And they found that in 1995, the snapper population was assessed at between 10 and 12% of the virgin biomass. That is the amount of fish that could be living in the Gulf. So in 1995, there was between 10 and 12% of the amount of fish that could be in the Gulf, which is really disturbing because all marine scientists, fisheries experts will call 8% a totally collapsed stock. Huh. So we could have lost the snapper, effectively. That after 1995 was when controls were brought into the Gulf. Commercial fishing was pushed to the outer limits of the Gulf. And you know, the limit on personal take was established then of 9 fish per person, and the minimum size, which has steadily gone up a little. Latest anecdotal reports are saying the snapper seem to be recovering, and there wasn't a full census of snapper done last year, 2012. The results of that haven't been released, but most of the smart money is predicting that the virgin biomass of snapper as it stands right now will be about 20%. So that is, there's one-fifth of the amount of snapper in the Gulf that could be there.
And I guess that's encouraging that it has risen since 2011.
Yes, it is. It is, and it's kind of it's quite a strong reinforcement to those folk who feel that we can manage the snapper fishery back to good health. And the goal most people are aiming at is to get us to a point of about 40% of virgin biomass. So we'll never have all the fish back in the Gulf that were there before people arrived, which is kind of unrealistic. But we could have double the amount that is there now. But that will take quite a long time. And it also doesn't, even with the levels of snapper that we have here now, it doesn't account for, you know, great natural disasters or overfishing by commercial fishermen or whatever. You know, the issue that was in the Coromandel just last week with 10 kilometers of coastline was covered in dead snapper washing ashore. So disasters could still affect the population. So we really feel we should do our best to help the Gulf recover. And the best way to do that is to allow for more area of reserve. It's as simple as that.
Okay, so the reserve area, whereabouts are you proposing that should be?
Well, I've just started proposing the reserve, and I'm sure there'll be some debate about it. In the column I wrote 2 weeks ago, it's quite easy to visualize. What I proposed was a line coming out from, there's a tiny little bay just between Hekarua Bay and Fisherman's Rocks. So if you take a line out from that point on the shore to the red rocks, there's a red pole marking the rocks in Onaroa Bay. So from Hekarua Bay out to the red pole, and then from the red pole, a straight line to Thompson's Point, which is the point where there's a seagull colony between Palm Beach and Onitangi. And that's an area of about 280 hectares, which is a small portion of the Gulf's 1.6 million hectares. And those boundaries I proposed will save the favorite spot, Fisherman's Rocks. In fact, we'll push those fishermen in the pound seats. They're right on the edge of the reserve. And for kayak fishermen from Palm Beach, it'll take about 5 minutes of paddling to get out to the boundary. Since then, I've had a lot of positive feedback, and the most interesting one was from Roger Grace, who's one of New Zealand's most respected marine scientists, and he said to me, it's too small, we need to go further out to sea, and he gave a credible scientific reason. They've discovered at Lee Marine Reserve that crayfish, believe it or not, walk quite long distances on the sand underwater. And Roger was suggesting that for crayfish stocks to recover, we would need a bigger buffer out to sea. So he was suggesting perhaps another half a kilometer out to sea. But that's the essential area we're talking about. It encloses Enclosure Bay, Palm Beach, Repo Bay, and Waiheke Bay. And it's an area of ecological importance. Enclosure Bay is the only rock-enclosed lagoon in the Hauraki Gulf. It's quite special. And Enclosure Bay used to be the habitat for little seahorses, beautiful creatures. They're not there anymore. So the reserve, we could hopefully get them back.
That would be great. So what is the process you're going through to make this happen?
The process is quite straightforward, actually. A community anywhere in the country can propose a marine reserve. And once they've proposed it, the Minister of Conservation is duty-bound to consider it. But if that community hasn't done its homework, and when the minister considers it, and if there are thousands of negative submissions, obviously it's not going to go anywhere. So I've done my homework in talking to as many people as I can. I found widespread support for this reserve, and I think when it gets proposed, which will certainly happen this year, it should have majority support. It's already supported by groups on the island, the Hauraki Gulf Conservation Trust, the Forest and Bird, the Resource Trust, the Waiheke Boating Club, all support it, and it's supported by important individuals, and the most important one, I think, is that all three of our MPs are totally behind it. So Nikki, Denise and Jacinda, all, yes, let's go for it. So we have kind of cross-party support So it can't be contested at Parliament level, say. And locally, Len Brown, Mike Lee, and a list of about a dozen PhDs in marine science that live on the island, or environmental science, all behind it, as well as just folk I talk to here. Right. So we've got widespread support. Yeah.
So the application that goes to the minister, that would come from our local board, would it?
No, it's best to come from an independent incorporated society or a trust. So when the time comes, we will either forward it under the name of the Forest and Bird, or probably under the Hauraki Gulf Conservation Trust. Yeah.
Okay.
But if it has the support of the community board, well, even better. And so far, Faye and Paul Walden on the board, and I'm sure most of the others would be supportive, but Paul is certainly very supportive, yeah.
Mm, right. So what's the time frame for this?
Sometime this year. I reckon it's got to happen this year. Yeah, it'll happen sometime this year.
Okay.
We'll get to a point where we think there's enough support, and we'll just go for it.
Well, that's excellent. Well, we're talking to Alex Stone about the proposed marine reserve on the northern side of Waiheke Island. And, Alex, do you need any help with this?
Yes, I do. I do. Anyone who's interested should email me or get in touch with me. Most people can know who I am on the island. My email address is alzzstone@extra.co.nz. But the most help that can be given is to write a letter of support to one of our local papers. I would like the majority support to be reflected in submissions and letters in the paper. It would appear that about 80% of the island is in support at the moment. One interesting statistic I can give you is that nationwide in New Zealand, 19.5% of people call themselves recreational fishermen. So it's just less than a fifth. I would say on Waiheke, percentage of recreational fishermen is much higher, fishing folk, shall I say. I'd say maybe 25-30% of Waihekeans are recreational fishing folk. But as I said earlier, a decent percentage of them are in favour of a reserve anyway. So I'm picking that we'll have 80% support across the community, yeah.
Oh, that would be great. Yes, well, we wish you luck with that, Alex, and
thank you
very much for coming in and telling us about it.
No worries, thank you.
Thanks a lot. Waiheke Radio. Yes, you're listening to Island Life. I'm Jan Scott, and it's my pleasure now to say good morning to Brian Griffiths. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, Jan.
And welcome. Now, you've come to, you've actually been volunteered to come and talk to us about the Twilight Rambles, although you've been, have been involved in setting them up this year, haven't you?
Well, I've been helping this year, but I'm sort of trying to reduce my forest and bird responsibilities, so I haven't done quite as much this year, but I certainly am intending to go on all the walks and help Jacqueline Joseph as much as possible. She, who's doing a really good job organising the walks this year.
Right, so when do they start?
Well, we had our first walk last Tuesday. That was the 8th of January, and their last one is on the 29th of January. So it's each Tuesday during January, which is what we have done for many, many years now.
Right, and what time do they start?
They start at 6 o'clock, and usually the walks take between an hour and a half and 2 hours.
Right. And at what sort of level of fitness do you need to partake?
Well, it's a matter of making sure that you've got good footwear as much as anything else. I think anybody who's not absolutely hopelessly unfit can cope with the walks that we have. But I do emphasise that it's really important for people to wear substantial shoes. Gentles are simply not suitable. In fact, they are quite dangerous.
Right. I see the next walk is sort of in the vicinity of Rocky Bay, Tiwhau Peninsula. Would that be a bit arduous?
It's a little steep in places, but you know, you just think take your time. We will, of course, be going down by the waterfront, so I think there'll be some walking over rocks, which will have to be done with a little bit of caution.
Right, and whereabouts do you meet for that walk?
Well, we meet in Rothschild Road, just above Foretown Bay, and go down the access track to the bay. So that's where we will be meeting.
Right. So is that sort of at the end of the peninsula?
It's getting close to the end of the peninsula. Yes, almost as far as you can go.
Okay, but out by the vineyard.
Yes.
Right. Is there parking out there?
There will be parking, but I suggest that people don't leave it until the last minute.
Right. Okay. And how many people do you usually get along to these?
Well, Jan, the numbers have varied over the years because this has been going on for a long time. Forest and Bird has been running these walks for about 7 years. The walks usually range from about 80 down to 30. It depends which part of the month you're talking about. But last Tuesday's walk is by far the biggest that I can recall. We had well over 100 people there, which was quite a challenge.
Yes, it would make it a bit hard to organise, I suppose.
Well, yes. I mean, going up the Rangihaua Hill, we had to do a lot of it single file, so it was, and it's quite steep. So that takes quite a bit of organising and managing.
Mm. Yes, it would. How many people are involved in the walks, in each walk?
Well, the number varies. I mean, we would usually have 5 or 6 core people. If you include helping with the barbecue and getting food and organising the advertising and that sort of thing.
Right. Is there any charge for this?
No, it's a free walk. Each year there is a grant provided by Auckland Council, and then Forest and Bird has the job of organising the walk using the money that the council provides. So that's how it's set up.
Ah, so that's how it's funded. Well, that's very good of the council.
Well, it is, yes. As I say, this has been going on for quite a long time,
right.
probably 10 years or more.
Do you have a guide for each of the walks who may point out items of interest or historical interest?
Well, yes, we do. We make sure that we have somebody leading the walk who's familiar with the area through which the walk is to go. And these people can vary from people who are familiar with bird life and plant life, and people who might be historians or have interesting anecdotal local stories to tell. For example, the next walk down to Faratana Bay and Okoka Bay and Okura Bay will be Paul Monin, the historian, and he will have some very, very interesting stories to tell about those absolutely fascinating bays. And then we're going to have the next walk at Paimela Bay. We will have Bruce Plestit, whose property, of course, that is. He'll be leading the walk, and we'll have Tanya Batt telling us some stories in a way that only Tanya Batt can tell us.
What a great idea! And what date is that one?
That one is on the 22nd.
On Tuesday, the 22nd of January, at Pymellon Bay, and the one at Tifau Foretana, and
is the 15th. Ooh,
is this coming Tuesday, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okoka, Foretana, and Oakara Bays on the Tifau Peninsula. And what about the because the 15th, and then the next one is the 22nd, and the last one will be the 29th.
The 29th is Onitanga Reserve. And Tony King Turner will be leading that walk, and it will take us through a part of the reserve that hasn't been accessed by the public for a long, long time, up what we call Rapa Valley, which goes up parallel to Waiheke Road. And it's this is where we have just put a new track which takes you from Waiheke Road up to Pahutukawa Ridge. And it's an absolutely magnificent track. So this will be the first time that track has actually been open to the public.
Uh-huh. So this is the Forest and Bird Reserve.
That's Forest and Bird Reserve, Onitanga.
Oh, yes. Wonderful. And yes. I guess that track was put in by the volunteers from Boris
some volunteer work has gone into it, but this is because it is a very, very specialised job actually constructing these tracks. Tony has actually been the one who's been doing most of that work.
Right.
Because he's a professional track maker.
Right, he's a landscaper too.
Yeah, landscaper, yes.
Yeah, I guess for health and safety you'd have to have people who knew what they were doing putting in these
that's
things.
That's right, and we're wanting to make these tracks much more user-friendly in terms of the steepness of the tracks and the firmness of the surface for most of the time.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. We're talking to Brian Griffiths about the Forest and Bird Society's Twilight Rambles, which are happening every Tuesday, this coming Tuesday the 15th, through to the final one on the 29th. Now, if you're interested in any of these and want some more information, you can ring Jacqueline Joseph on 372-2831. The walk-on coming up on Tuesday is out at Tifau Peninsula, and it starts at 6 o'clock, and people should meet at the Foritana Walkway entrance, which is signposted on Rothschild Avenue at Tifau Peninsula. Now, Brian, we'll just change the subject a little, because I remember talking to you early last year about the community garden project you were involved in Onitangi, and I gather you're still involved in that. How's it going?
Well, we go from the depths of depression to absolute elation. This is the way things tend to go when you're growing things. Overall, I have to say that it's going very well indeed. And the focal point, of course, of all of this is the community gardening grow table at the market each Saturday morning, and that's a real buzz of activity, and it's really quite inspiring to see the level of interest and the amount of produce that comes across the table. So it is actually going very well, and we've got people producing surplus in their own gardens, which is the most important thing of all, of course, bringing that produce along to the table. We've got four community gardens which provide produce in various amounts throughout the year. And then we've also got the two community-supported agriculture sites contributing as well, one at Timutuka Bay and the other one at Putiki Road. So there is a lot of produce coming across the table, and I'd have to say, overall, it is going very well. Wish we had a little bit more consistent rainfall on Waiheke, and not quite so much wind and hot sunshine. But that apart, everything is going well.
But you probably need some more volunteers, do you?
Yes, indeed. As tends to happen, we've got a very keen bunch of core people working and helping. If people are interested, the thing to do would be, please come along to the market on Saturday morning, go to the grow table, introduce yourself, and perhaps as a result attach yourself to one of the gardens. We've got a garden in Onitangi, there are two sites really in Ostend, a site in Surfdale and one at Blackpool, and of course the Timutuku Bay site as well.
Right. Whereabouts in the market is the table?
It's just close to the hall itself. It's just around the corner from the main entrance to the hall.
Okay. Right, and what time do you usually set up and start?
We start setting up from 7:30 onwards. I would suggest if people want to buy produce or have got produce to provide, that they do get there early, before 9 o'clock.
Yeah, yes, because I guess it would sell pretty much as soon as you put it on the table.
Well, as it comes in, it goes out. That tends to be the way.
Exactly. Do you have a trading system? If somebody brings produce in from their garden and that they can swap it for something?
Well, that's essentially what it is. It is really a food exchange. That's the way it was set up. But we're very, very flexible and very informal. So if people haven't got produce to exchange, then they can give us a donation for the produce that they take. Right. Quite a lot of people just simply bring produce in and donate it.
Right. Oh, that's good.
Yes.
Yeah, well, I suppose you'd have a glut of one particular thing. If it's a particularly good year for plums, you might have more plums than you know what to do.
Yes, it's interesting you mention that, because just a couple of weeks ago we had so many plums we just didn't know what to do with them. That does happen, yeah, but that's fine. That's a good way to be.
Mm. I wonder if there's somebody out there or an organisation out there that would be only too happy to take the excess off your hands and bottle them or make jam for fundraising or something of that sort.
Well, that is being done. There are people who've actually done that from time to time. I think James Samuel is one who was organising it again this year, just recently. So, and anybody else who would like to do that, that is fantastic.
Right. So all they need to do is come up to the to your stall, at the Grow stall at the market, yes, on a Saturday morning, and put a proposal that...
Yep, absolutely. Love
okay.
to see them.
Oh, that's great. Excellent. Well, I'm glad it's all going so well on that score. I mean, it's a wonderful idea. And I think we could probably do with a few more community gardens out there.
Well, the interesting thing, Dan, is that we really have quite an abundance of possible farm garden sites. We're not short of sites, land that we can borrow to use for growing things. Really, where we are short is of people to actually work those sites.
Ah, yes, willing gardeners, people
right.
to do the hard graft.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So, if you're willing to help out with the community gardens, then please get down to the Grow stall at the market on Saturday morning and let them know that you're available, and I'm sure they'd welcome you with open arms.
Yep.
Great. Thank you very much, Brian, for coming in and talking to us about the community gardens and the Twilight Rambles, and we hope to see you again sometime.
Thank you very much, Dan.
Thanks. Now it's my great pleasure to welcome Eli Mead to the studio. Welcome, Eli.
Thank you for having me.
A pleasure. Now, you have been involved in a very exciting project with Capture Productions,
mm-hmm.
the first film from Capture Productions, I presume. Is that right?
Yes, it is. It's our first short film.
Is it Vivid? And it's been chosen for the world's largest short film festival. What is that all about?
It's called the TropFest, and it's actually it is an international film festival, and it is the world's largest film festival. However, this one is actually just based in New Zealand. It's a New Zealand division.
Oh, okay.
And it's the first year it's actually been in New Zealand. It started in Australia, started by a guy named John Pullman, I believe, at the Tropicana Cafe in Sydney. And that was about 20 years ago, and it just blossomed into this massive film festival that's now worldwide.
Brilliant. So, will it be going anywhere other than New Zealand?
I don't believe so. They may put them out further. Obviously, the internet's a big, broad place now, so there's the whole TropFest thing is mainly net-based.
Right.
But they do have the big festival down in New Plymouth on the 27th at the Bowl of Brooklands.
27th of January.
Yeah, that's
right.
This month.
Okay.
Great venue if anyone's been to the Bowl of Brooklands. It's a fantastic place. So they have the big screen out over the pond there, and lots of famous New Zealand actors, and it's a big event, so it's quite exciting to be part of it.
Excellent. Now tell me something about Vivid. What is it about, and was it shot locally on Waiheke?
It is all shot locally on the island. It's out at a place called Dead Man's Bay, which is out past Whakanaefa.
Mm-hmm.
Stunning backdrop for the film. We really wanted to we've got the fish there quite often, and just from fishing there, looking back over the hills, we thought, oh, we've got to film something here, we've got to do something here. So Greg and I went out and basically wrote a very simple film for it, and went out and shot it.
Right, so Greg
Cantwell, he's the co-directed it with
oh
me.
Right,
he's part of Capture Productions as well.
Okay.
With Willow Roundtree and Warwick Lewis.
Right, so you and Greg were the producers of it, of the movie.
I produce it personally.
Right.
Produced is a very loose term, when basically the cost of it was about 36 beers and gas for the car.
Eat your heart out, Hollywood.
Yeah.
Right, so can you tell us something about the movie, what it's about, without giving too much away?
Well, it's very short. I often get asked what it's about. It's
when you funny. Say how short is it, how short is
it's
short?
It's 5 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah. I often get asked what it is about, and I always draw a blank because it's not really about anything. It's just a slice of life in this young boy's life, and it's an event that happens to him. I don't want to explain too much without giving too much
is
away.
Is there a script to it?
There's no dialogue. Right. Because it was our first short, we wanted to keep it really simple. Because we have very simple, we have good cameras and all that. We don't mm-hmm. have the greatest sound equipment. And it was blowing a gale too out there when we were filming. So it was actually quite a good thing we had no dialogue. It would have been damn near impossible for us to pull off. So it's we stripped it right back. We came up with a basic idea. And having no budget, you just got to keep stripping until you find something that works on a shoestring budget. And so it's mainly just visuals that we focused on. We mainly just really wanted to get the shots right and get the angles right.
So who came up with the concept?
It was combination. Actually, Greg started doing a thing. We study at SIT. We still haven't finished. I'm still doing my diploma there, actually, which is the Southern Institute of Technology.
Oh, no.
And he had a... one of the assignments he had to do was just a simple scene. And from that, I was quite impressed by the shots and the hillside, and it was quite dark and stuff, and that just blossomed the story from there on. It sort of fell through. We also wanted to use Greg's son, Eli Cantwell, in as many films as we can. He's a very good young little actor, and you use what you've got. So we basically wrote it around him. Okay. Small boy.
And how old is he?
He's 10. Okay. I might be wrong. 11, I'm not sure. I'm not entirely sure. And of course our friend Justin Bieber. Not the Justin Bieber, but the Justin Bieber.
Oh, right.
And right. He plays the male lead in it. Mm-hmm. And he also does very well too.
Wonderful. Are there any females in it?
No, there's only two actors.
Oh, okay.
Two actors, no dialogue.
Okay, well, fair enough. Mm. Yeah. Maybe next time. Are you working on something else at the moment?
Not at the moment. Well, we always come up with different ideas. The hardest part is actually getting a good idea on paper. Mm. You often come up with a great concept for a film, and then you realise whilst writing it that it's just not going to work without millions of dollars, you know.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The hardest part is actually getting a simple idea on paper. And once we get there, then we can move on to something else. But we are working on stuff, and there will be another one for next year. We will be starting probably in a couple of months, actually filming something, hopefully.
Oh, excellent. Mm. So how did you get involved with Capture Productions?
I started Capture Productions about 4 years ago, and then Willow and Greg came on board to help me with it, and we basically just wanted to film weddings on the island and make a small profit from that to buy the equipment to make short films.
Okay.
So this is the first time it's actually worked. We've got some nice cameras now and some toys to play with, so to speak.
That's great.
So the ball is starting to roll for us. It's quite good.
Wonderful. Are you still doing the weddings?
Yes, we still do the weddings.
Other special occasion, I would expect.
And other occasions, yes, we do. We have done council work and filmed random little things on the island.
Right.
This is my time to do my spot, isn't it?
For absolutely.
Capture Productions. Capture Productions.
Go for it.
For all your wedding needs.
Yes. Well, how do they contact you?
Well, we have a internet site, actually, which is probably the best way. They can look at our work on other mm-hmm. shorts and other weddings. And that's, if you just basically just Google Capture Productions, it's actually capturewaiaki.co.nz. But it's easy to remember Capture Productions, I'm sure.
Mm.
And that'll take them to our site, and we have all our contact details and our wedding packages on there.
Great. That's great. So if you're planning a wedding or a special birthday or wedding anniversary or some other momentous occasion, get in touch with Eli at Capture Productions and they'll capture it for eternity for you. Yeah, right. Now, I always get confused about the roles of producers and directors as to who does what.
Yes. Well, producers really just front up the cash. Their main role is to make it happen. So they will get the people together. They'll organise who's going to direct it, who's going to do this, who's going to do what. So they're the starting point. They'll pick up a script and say, I'm going to produce this and make it happen. So often you'll see a film presented by somebody. who didn't actually even direct it. All they actually really did was just front up the cash for it. So a lot of Hollywood actors now are now producing as well, because they're obviously making millions. And and directing is basically, gosh, it's also a loosely termed too. A director will, he's the head honcho, I guess. He's the one that makes sure all the shots are right and how it's going to be shot. I guess he's the artistic, the hub of the film.
And tells the actors where to go and
how to move exactly. And all that stuff. Yeah, exactly.
So was there a director as part of this production, or were you it?
Well, there was only four of us working on this film. Mm. And the way I personally like to direct and work is actually just let everyone do their thing and actually have a part to say. So Greg and I, my co-director, he was really good with his son, obviously, because being his father, he can direct him quite well. And we just spin off each other. So it's with when you got a one thing I've found with filming, I have done other films for like the 48 hours, but I don't really call them films. They're more of a, well, I don't know what you'd call it. It's hard to make a film in 48 hours. That's another short film festival that happens every year.
That's right, yeah.
And for that, we used to get just anybody that wanted to be involved would come in and would just try and film something in 48 hours, and it always just fall apart. It would always be really hard to actually pull off. What I found is if you get a smaller group of people, the less people, the lot easier it is. You know, more chefs boil the bread, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
And so I found a team that works here on the island, and it it's a collaboration.
Yes, yeah, it's good when that happens and everything sort of falls into place and you all work well together and complement each other.
Exactly.
Well, you're listening to Island Life on Waiheke Radio, your community radio station, and we're talking to Eli Mead from Capture Productions about the short film Vivid, their first short film, which has been chosen for the world's largest short film festival that will be held in New Plymouth on the 27th of this month. Now, are we going to have a chance to see Vivid on the island?
Ooh, possibly. I have been asked by the cinema. I'll probably give them a copy. I'd prefer is if we'd find more short. There's a lot of talented people on the island. There's other short films floating around as well. So it'd probably be good to do a night one night.
Film night, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
definitely.
What a good idea. Okay, so if there's anybody out there who's made a short film, you know, just go onto the Capture Productions website and let them know you're there. You never know what might happen. So, and you said earlier that you are thinking about your next project.
Well, we'll probably make another one for the Trop Fest. And how it works is basically, on the 27th, after they show 16 shorts selected from hundreds around the country, and then they'll basically go on to the next Trop Fest, which will be Trop Fest 2014. And on that night, they'll give a TSI, which is an item that has to be in the film. This year it was a gumboot, and it can be in the film in any way. It can be like a major part of the film. It can be just in the background of a scene anywhere. It's just to prove that the film was made for the Trop Fest. So once we find out what that is, we can start trying to work on something else as well.
Okay, so Vivid, was that for the Trot Fest?
Yes, yes.
And what was the item you had to have in it, or is that giving away?
The item was a gumboot.
Oh, it was a gumboot, yeah, right, yeah. Okay. Oh, well, that's good for Waiheke Island. Mm. Yeah, we can see lots of those around on the island.
Yeah.
Now tell me, how did you get into filmmaking?
Oh, well, I've been wanting to make film ever since I was a wee little whippersnapper, I guess. I got into acting in school and photography, and I got a lucky break when I was 17 and got work on the TV series Home and Away in Australia. And I was just behind the scenes, and I just basically plotted around and kept my own things and watched them and learned how to do stuff. And after a while, they some of the guys on the show taught me a few little techniques and stuff. And I just took that with me. Then I came back to New Zealand, and then I met a guy named Barry Ketchin, and he started a little thing called Waiheke TV that used to play at the local Waiheke cinema.
Oh, right.
And he basically just threw a camera in my hand and showed me how to use an editing suite and sent us on our way to do stuff. And I just kept trying it and kept playing around, and eventually, it takes a long time, but eventually you get to a point where you feel like you can actually do what you're doing, which is,
well,
you know,
yeah,
what I mean.
That's right. And it sounds like a good way that you've gone with starting a business doing videos for or movies for special events, and using that to finance your passion for short film movies.
Short films is definitely the way to start out if you want to get into the film industry. It's most renowned directors these days, if you look back in the history, they would have started making lots of little short films. And there's very few venues for short films. Not many. So they're actually hard to find, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Now with YouTube, of course, you can look, hunt around for them and watch a lot of. There's a lot of really good ones out there. But yeah, there's small, because they're so short, you can't really do a whole screening for one film.
Yeah.
So there's very few venues for them, but it's certainly the best way to start out.
Yeah, but I would think it'd be quite a good starter for, say, a movie theatre like the one on Waiheke, show it before a major movie.
Yes, definitely.
So you get a short, like.
I remember going to the theatres as a kid and seeing that they used to play the little cartoons.
Oh, right, yes.
The little Looney Tunes, little short films before the films.
Could do that. And where to from here? Have you got any plans to go into feature films at all?
Well, that would be a lot. I'd love to do a feature film. Unfortunately, it costs a lot of money to do a feature film. Even short films can get costly. But absolutely, that is my goal. One day to make a feature film, so to speak. Have a poster on the on the wall with my name on it. That'd be fantastic.
Yeah. And have you got any particular type of movie you'd like to make? Any particular book or
not really.
Story that you'd like to do?
In fact, I really enjoy writing, and I always surprise myself. Every time I write something, it's usually somewhat different, either comical or dark or dramatic. It never seems to be too similar.
Right, okay. So you might even make a film with one of your own stories at some time.
Yes, yes, definitely. I'm always compiling ideas, bouncing off people, and sometimes you get a start off with a very simple idea, and then it moves up and it grows and can become too big. Once it gets to that point, I usually just sort of file away in the
too hard basket.
Yeah.
Or the get round to it basket. Yeah. Well, we wish you all the very best for the success of Vivid, which is your first film for Capture Productions, and it's been chosen for the world's largest short film festival down in New Plymouth on the 27th of this month. And we do hope that we will get a chance to see it here on the island, and maybe even in Auckland.
I'm sure it will be. I'm sure it will be screened at the cinema, definitely.
That's great. Okay, Eli, well, we've been talking to Eli Mead from Capture Productions, and he was a co-producer of Vivid, and we wish you all the best for the future. Thanks for coming in.
You're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM.
Now, it's my pleasure to say good morning to Julia from the library. Good morning, Julia.
Good morning.
Now, you've recently joined the library, I gather.
I have.
So you've been there, what, about 6 months?
About that now, yeah.
Right, but you were working in town before that at the library in the city.
Yeah, I was over at Central Library up on the first floor.
Right. Okay, so what have you come to talk about today?
Well, I thought I'd talk about the digital library, which is a service not so many people are aware of. So it's a brilliant, brilliant service. Have you used it yourself yet?
No, I haven't.
Oh, okay, give it a go sometime. There's some really good features on there.
Well, I gather that it's good for dummies like me who don't really know much about the internet.
It's a lot of it's pretty matter of fact. Some of it, if you're feeling a little bit unsure about what you're doing on it, you're most welcome to come in and have a chat to us. You can also ring up the library number or if you get completely stuck, and someone can talk you through.
Right. Okay, so... What are you going to focus on today with regard to that?
Right, I thought I'd focus on two in particular, maybe brush over ebooks a little bit. The first one is called Press Display, and that's an online collection of New Zealand and international newspapers. We've got, we had a customer come in last week, and he was interested in getting hold of, what was he looking at? I think it was The Guardian, yeah. Yeah, and he wanted basically as up to date as he could get it. So we went online and found that we can get him today's copy, and he was really chuffed with that. And we were zooming in, going through different pages, and we ended up copying and printing out some particular information for him.
Right, so you can get the current issue of overseas newspapers. You don't have to wait until they come in.
That's the one. So you can look at it online. It's full colour, full page format, 2,200 newspapers plus. It's got multiple languages, and not just from New Zealand, it's all around the world. It's really, really, it's quite interesting to be able to see what the different take is from different countries.
Yes, I would expect it would be. And you'd be able to get the Times, I suppose, and the New York papers.
What were we getting? I think we got the... I can't remember. We got the New York... One of the New York ones, anyway, a couple of those. I can't tell you all the... Yeah, just go on and have a look. It's... if you want to get on and have a look at it, go to the website aucklandlibraries.govt.nz, which is written on the more recent library cards, and just click on Digital Library, and Press Display is one of the more obvious buttons on it because it's reasonably well used.
And that'll give you a list of all the newspapers that you can access.
It can, it will let you search for it, definitely.
Right, now can you do this from home?
Yes, you can. Now, with a lot of the library, digital library resources, you need a barcode, which will be on your library card, and your PIN number. And if you don't have a PIN, just come in, contact us, or if you can't remember your PIN, that's okay too. Just bring in your library card or give us a ring with your library card handy, and we can reset it for you.
Oh, that's great. Now, of course, if you were accessing these newspapers online from home,
yep,
you'd have to pay a subscription, wouldn't you?
If
you weren't doing it through the library.
If you're not going through the library, yeah, you would be paying a subscription.
Yeah, so. And that's for each newspaper.
Yep.
So it's a wonderful service that the library offers.
Definitely useful, yeah.
Yes, indeed. If you want to keep up with the news globally, then that's the way to go.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. And what else have we got?
There's also Freegal, which I think more and more people are becoming aware of Freegal now. It means free and legal. And it's for downloading music.
Oh, okay.
It's really, really useful because you know that you're pretty safe. Like, if you're normally like just going on the internet and downloading music willy nilly, you can, you might download a virus or something. Well, this is a legitimate route into getting music through the internet, and it's from the Sony catalogue. Masses and masses of music on there. You can download up to 3 songs a week, again using going through your library card using your PIN, and comes down MP3 format. That means you can play it on pretty much any mobile device.
Right, and this is a wide range of music?
It's great, yes. Yeah, Sony is massive, right. So... Yeah, it's been brilliant. I've had everything. I downloaded a couple of Pink songs the other week, and someone was getting Harry Belafonte. So wonderful, wonderful range.
That's great. Yes, and you can do that at home, of course.
Absolutely. Right. Yeah.
As you say, using your library card. So what do you do when you go into that site? It gives you steps to put in your library card number and your PIN number.
Yeah, it will prompt you
and
for that.
That again is through the library website.
Yep, so just go onto the library homepage, aucklandlibraries.govt.nz, click on the link to the digital library, and that will give you all the links to all the other resources. If you can't see it there obviously, then you can search for it. We've got heaps on there. It's not just Freegal and Press Display. Maybe have a cruise through the Sir George Grey website if you want to look at old manuscripts and exhibitions that they've had. They've posted up some of the interesting snippets that they've had from that, and I was just absolutely astonished by some of the beautiful things that the library has.
Wow. Yes. Well, of course, if you really are having trouble negotiating and finding what you want on that website, you can always call into the library and
absolutely.
They'll give you a hand with that.
Yep.
And take you through step by step so you
yep.
can figure out or find out how to access those things from home.
Yep.
But as you say, the George Grey Library would be phenomenal.
It's amazing. Some of the old manuscripts that they've got in there, and they've posted some of the items from previous exhibitions. There was an exhibition called Shades of Grey, not the 50 Shades, but it was just absolutely gorgeous. It was just I could have wasted a bit of time there easily.
Yes.
That one is good to start with because it's quite easy to navigate around, and if you don't have a barcode or a PIN, that's fine, because this is one where we're just trying to showcase, you know, how lovely it is to, you know, be within the libraries.
And I suppose quite a bit of that material, the George Grey material, would not normally be accessible to the public because it's so fragile. And
that's the one, yeah.
Special.
Yeah, normally it's locked away, special, you know, sealed areas and everything, except for when it comes out for an exhibition. So, but we're putting more and more of the items, gradually scanning it and putting it online. There's a special team of people who are working on that and have been going on that for quite a while now. And they're doing a great job. I mean, you can also look at some of the images of old photos, and there's some lovely ones from around Waiheke. That was really interesting to look at too. But heaps and heaps. Also on the digital library, we've got a few links to recommended websites which people might find interesting, like Best Health. That's a website of health information which is maintained by the British Medical Journal. And that's nice, easy, quick link to that, and it gives really good information for people about, you know, just your own health. It's not just for doctors, it's for patients as well, and people who are just curious. So basically if it's on here, it will have been vetted by library staff.
Right. Okay. And can people suggest things to go on the website? I mean, if there's something that they think might be a good idea, they perhaps mention it to somebody at the
quite
library
possibly.
Here.
There is a for example, there is a part of the website where you just on the library home site where you can go in and do a suggestion for purchase.
Okay.
So that one, for example, if you want an e-book or an e-audio book, you can put in a suggestion for purchase for that.
Okay, right. Now, does the library here have regular times when they will take people through the website, or can you just walk in at any time?
Regular times would be better. Normally it's Tuesday and Thursday. It's book a librarian. At the moment over summer, because it's school holidays, and that one's on hiatus at the moment. But definitely just come in and have a chat, and we can try and work something out.
That would be great.
Yeah.
And I suppose you've had lots of holiday makers through and getting things to read for the...
Absolutely. It's been masses of people. It's been great. Really interesting people coming through. Because you can take books out from the library, any one of the 55 libraries of which, you know, Waiheke is a part. And if you're travelling around Auckland, you can just, like, if you're on Waiheke, you get out a book on Waiheke and you end up in Wellsford, you can just drop the book back in Wellsford if it's not convenient to bring it back here.
Oh, wow, that's great.
Very handy.
It is very handy, and you don't suffer the fines for getting it back late.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's another thing about the digital library is if you're downloading e-books and e-audiobooks, you're not going to get fined for late returns because they check themselves back in automatically.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Yeah.
That's clever.
That's very useful. Yeah.
Yeah, indeed. That's great. Is the children's program still going over the holiday?
It is. It's going gangbusters. It's absolutely fantastic. We've had such a good response. That's the Dare to Explore. I've got my t-shirt on, which is not going to show, but it's been great. Lots and lots of enthusiasm. We've had kids coming in from other libraries to get their passports stamped, so to prove that they've been on Waiheke.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
So that was an initiative of the library here, was it, to issue passports?
No, that was it's part of the Dare to Explore thing. Oh, right. They get a booklet that's called a passport, and in it are all the activities that they can check off as they go along.
Great.
And so they've got their name and everything and a picture, and
brilliant.
It's really good.
That's great. Well, our library, I think, is we're very lucky with it, because the staff are so proactive and they have something for everyone. So it's to be encouraged to get down to the library and just soak up the atmosphere.
Absolutely.
Even if you're not getting out a book.
No, it's just good to be down there. So we've got a lot. We've also got the free Wi-Fi. So we've got a lot of people. Just, you don't have to be inside the library. You can just sit outside and enjoy the air and check your email.
The Wi-Fi is there.
Yeah, it is. It extends outside the library.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, maybe download some music while you're there.
You could too. There you go. Well, thank you, Julia, for those ideas and for coming in and keeping us up to date with what's happening at the Waiheke Library.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. We'll see you again.
Cheers.
You've been listening to the interviews from Island Life, our weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, with interviews repeated on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. and Thursdays at 12:30 p.m. Island Life is brought to you by The Village Butchery, the place to go for great cuts of meat and friendly service. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onirowa.